Hello and welcome to The Unmissables. It's a weekly podcast about pop culture, but mainly television, a little bit of film and other stuff. My name is Boyd Hilton. I'm joined by my glorious colleague, Kay Ribeiro.
Hello.
And normally we've been joined by our glorious colleague, Steph Seelan, who's been here with us for our previous 27 podcasts, but she's not available this week, Kay.
Yeah, she's having a break.
She's having a break. But instead, we've got our glorious, legendary guru, producer, editor,
friend.
Teacher, friend, podcast expert, John Harris, who until now has been silent, like Maris.
Silent in, John.
You know, in Frasier,
yeah.
Niles' wife Maris, you never hear from her or see her. She's just his presence. And I kind of thought maybe John will be that person forever.
That enigmatic figure.
We just
figure.
Talk about him. You never actually hear from him, but he's here. Hi, John.
He speaks.
Hello.
Hi.
How do you feel about having to join in?
Very anxious.
Are you?
I know, I can tell you're tense.
I'm
don't
quite,
be tense.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into a fight with Boyd, but at the same time, if I'm taking the role of Steph, I should probably get into a fight with Boyd.
And you've got to have some kind of irrational dislike of someone.
Oh, don't worry, that'll come.
Feel free to get into a fight at any point.
Okay. Yeah, I'm here to split you up.
You have your other podcast, don't you, John? What's your other podcast that you're doing at the moment?
Thanks, Boyd.
Yeah.
I do a weekly podcast called The Dream Factory, which we rather arrogantly, as you have done, calling yours the great, I think you call it the best pop culture podcast.
Yeah.
We call it the world's greatest user-generated movie creation podcast.
Ooh.
Which it's such a niche topic that I actually think we could confidently say that we are the greatest.
Yeah.
And so listeners come up with silly movie ideas, mostly based on puns, and we riff.
Is it a weekly thing?
Weekly.
Mm. And it is very funny, Kay, as a listener.
You're a subscriber.
It's a hilarious weekly listen.
Yeah. I too am a subscriber.
Thanks,
I've
guys.
Yet
good.
To listen, but I am a subscriber.
Oh, let's listen. It was good that you're honest, though.
Yeah, I'm always
honesty
honest.
Honesty at all times.
Listen, best. That's what you get on this podcast.
Absolutely. So this week, we are looking at the new Jack Whitehall comedy adventure thriller drama, Bounty Hunters, which is coming up on Sky One next week. Gunpowder is the new historical drama about the Gunpowder Plot, co-created by and starring Kit Harington. And we're going to hear from him as well, because I interviewed him, Kay.
With his actual voice, we're going to hear.
Yes. I interviewed him on the day before it was announced that he was engaged to be married.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Did you know?
No.
Did you ask? So you didn't? Oh, you didn't?
No, he mentioned my girlfriend, you know.
Oh, he was playing it cool, and he was probably,
cool.
He'd already put a ring on it.
Yeah. So that's exciting. And the end of the effing world. Now, this is the actual title of this series, John. It's the official title from Channel 4 has three asterisks in the UCK bit of that word, of the F word. What's your feeling about that?
I feel really good about it.
Do you?
Thanks, Boyd.
Yeah.
Are we going to say the swear word?
Well, that's what I was thinking. I haven't really come to terms with it. So far I've said the end of the effing world. And I think, but we can swear, can't we? Obviously, we just have to put the little, S for swearing logo.
But I think if they've asterisked it out, maybe we should respect that.
Maybe.
If Channel 4 have done that.
Perhaps. But what it is it's a 8-part, I think, kind of drama, thriller, teen thing that they're showing on Channel 4 initially, episode 1. That's all going to be on all four, their streaming online hub, all in one go, like a box set thing.
Which Netflix
the first time
binge
Netflix
situation.
Star, which is the first time they've ever done that for a homegrown drama.
Interesting.
How interesting.
Yeah, I find that interesting. And you know I don't like to binge, but...
No. And we've also got the opening section of the podcast where we talk about what the hell we've been looking at, reading...
Who you've been meeting.
...listening to. I mean, in my case, it's a series of name drops.
But shameless.
Maybe that will be the case for you too as well. I don't know. Kay, what have you been listening to, watching, meeting, doing?
Okay, first of all, I just want to give you some exciting news. Well, it's exciting my world, right? Because it just broke before I came in here.
If you're excited, I'm excited.
Thank you, Boy, for support. Supermarket Sweep is officially coming back. Oh my God, Boy's just choked on his tea. He's choked on his tea. Is that
really
exciting?
Killed him.
Yeah, I know. Everyone's excited.
First of all, I'm not sure this kind of... I am excited, but this kind of... This is TV news. This is a new format point. This is a new...
Well, yeah, well, I just couldn't keep it in.
Okay,
I just couldn't. I know, like, John... We haven't cleared this with John, our producer. I don't know how he feels about this. But knowing every podcast that I mention, I would like it to be brought back. Pretty much, if you listen back, regular listeners will know, I'm a big fan of Supermarket Sweep, and I've always wanted to come back. And now Fremantle have signed up the rights to it.
Do you think they've been listening to the podcast? Is that have they?
I think that's exactly why it's happening.
Did they mention in the press release?
Yeah, thanks to Kay for all your support.
You need to go on as a guest.
I would love that because I've already got the I told you before, right? Those stupid people who go on and they're like, oh yeah.
I'm harsh. Gonna...
No, they are stupid because they go around the different, the aisles and they look at these small little items. You need to go for high value items. Nappies, alcohol, me electrical.
That
goods.
Sound you hear is Kay punching her own hand to emphasise the point.
Because I feel very strongly about this.
And is it still being hosted by...
Well, Dale Winton.
Dale Winton.
I cannot confirm. I don't know.
I haven't said that.
No. I don't know. But what else is he doing other than Panto?
Steady. Bloody hope so. Do you know my Dale Winton story, John, is always that I interviewed him a few years ago and I said to him, what would be your like, dream project? What's the one thing you've always wanted to do, you know, on television or whatever? And you know what he said it was? Was, I'm like, you've told, I've never noticed. Oh, he wanted to do his own personal history of rap music.
Whoa!
Yes.
What?
In which, or like a rap journey where he tours around America meeting his favourite rap musicians. He's obsessed with rap.
No way.
And he was not joking. And he proceeded to...
Why is someone not giving him that show?
I don't know. I would watch that. Yeah.
Hip-hop history with Dale Winton.
Exactly.
Would be amazing.
Yeah, he would. He was being deadly serious.
He could have joined Chris and Kem on their musical journey. out of Love Island.
No, I think we're talking proper rap. I don't think Dale will be at home to Chris and Kem.
They're all as equally orange as one another, so that would...
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's a good point. Oh, yeah. That's a good technical point.
Orange is the only colour.
Yeah.
And what else have you been... That was news. Oh, yeah. That was TV news. You haven't even been watching that.
No.
Come on.
Okay, well, actually, it's a listen for me. I've done a bit of listening, yes.
What?
Unfortunately, not to John's podcast. I will, though, as everyone should. But now, words that I've never said to you on this podcast. Radio 4, book at bedtime. Bedtime book.
Whoa.
Yes. Now, I'm a big Adrian Mole fan, Sue Townsend fan, and The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole, age 13 and three quarters, has been the book at bedtime. So I would recommend anyone who loves Sue Townsend.
Is that the original Adrian Mole book?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because there's loads of sequels and stuff, aren't there?
No, it's the...
So they read out half an hour an evening or something?
No, it's like 13-minute portions, and there's 10 of them, 10 episodes, and it's like, it's the book.
Oh.
Do you think that's great?
That's really good, yeah. Who reads it? I'm testing you now.
No, sorry. And I was going to write that down, and I thought, Boyd won't go into that. No, he's taking a real deep dive into this situation.
Real deep dive. I mean, just basically... who read it. Yeah, but no, it's fine.
Someone
it wasn't anyone
voice.
That I recognised the name of. And I have to say, did you ever watch the TV series?
Of course. Stephen Mangan.
Yes, exactly. But it wasn't as good as, like, the voice on, you know, for the HMO. It wasn't as...
Okay. So they had one thing to do, which is read it, and it's not even that good.
No, it is, but it's just like if you're nostalgic,
okay,
the original.
No, yeah,
boy, don't
enough.
Hate
Sorry.
On Adrian Marr.
I'm not hating.
Also, made me Google then the TV series, and I forgot that Chris Gascoigne was in it from Peter Barlow from Coronation Street.
Oh,
it was an Adrian Marr. Oh. Did you know that?
No,
it's an interesting fact for you. Okay, very quickly, the second thing I've been listening to is the Adam Buxton podcast with Louis Theroux on it. I think it's episode 49, and on it he talks about his documentary. You know, the US one that we just previewed where he looks at the crime situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
They do a lot of impressions also. If anyone listens to S-Town, they do a lot of impressions of John B. McLemore. And it was amazing.
Oh, that's a great
podcast. I didn't realise Louis Theroux was so good at doing impressions.
That is extraordinary, yeah. I mean, that is one of the classic podcasts though, isn't it, John, as a podcast expert?
Absolutely. Not to hijack your point, but this week they had... Rhys Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton from The League of Gentlemen.
Wow, I haven't listened to that one. Is that the new one, is it?
Yeah, it was live from the London Podcast Festival. It's very good.
Oh, really?
Very funny.
And he's got Johnny Marr as well.
Yes. Really good guess.
I mean, a really good guess.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we've got Kit Harington. Let's make that
exactly.
Clear.
No, we're doing some like pod cross promo there. Yeah.
Cod cross promo.
Easy for you to say.
That's lovely. Anything else, Kate?
No, that's it. Just listening.
Good.
Very
You've,
listening. And
All
you know.
Of those are very exciting. While we're talking about this bit of the podcast, I wanted to mention on Twitter, Tradition, TRAGICIAN, or / at Little Emsley with four E's, tweeted us today, John. Do you know about this? To say, just wanted to thank Boyd Hilton, Carrie Bear and Steph Seelan for your recommendation of Long Shot, which was that documentary on the Netflix, which we talked about, which in fact Steph mainly brought up last week in the opening, what have you been watching section of the show, John? So thank you very much for getting back to us, Little Emsley / Tradition.
I love how you keep on trying to reel John in and he's reluctant to say anything.
Well, you know, he doesn't seem reluctant.
Because he's used to like not speak. John speaking for me is as exciting as Kate Moss speaking publicly. You know, Kate Moss doesn't usually like to do it.
True.
And in the George Michael documentary she did, and I was thrilled.
Yeah.
John having to speak now on the podcast.
Well, he's going to really have to speak now because he's going to have to tell us what he's been watching, listening
been watching
to, doing
John.
This week, John.
American Vandal.
Oh, ooh. Yes, I'm with you.
Netflix documentary.
Oh, Netflix.
Mocking the kind of serial, the Jinx, Making a Murderer style episodic documentaries talking one subject. However, this is about finding a vandal who drew 27 penises on 27 cars in spray paint. And when I saw the trailer, I thought, I wasn't sure because I love those style of documentaries. And I thought, I don't really want to watch something taking the mick out of it. However, the way they get you in is you think it's a comedy, but it just turns out to be just a gripping TV show.
So is it a mockumentary?
Yeah, so it's a mockumentary, but it's actually just like a really great whodunit.
Have you watched the whole thing?
Yes.
Oh, you see, I am in the middle of it. Yeah, it is absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I'm very glad you mentioned it because I'm on the episode where they start talking about the drawings of the penises, whether they're hairy balls or not hairy balls, which is a crucial plot point, Kate.
Really?
Yeah, it is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, you're right. Because it takes it, even though it's really funny, isn't it? It's like dealing with the mystery is who drew the cock and balls on all these cars.
I don't know what gets so giggly about this.
Because it's forensically analyses every single element of all the perpetrators, all the possible suspects. It is absolutely
like it's
brilliant.
A real crime.
Yeah.
So there's one character who they're not sure whether he's telling the truth or not, and they go back to a claim that he got a hand job at camp from the hottest girl in the year, and they find out whether he's telling the truth about that or not.
What?
To see whether he's a liar or not. So it's like using that kind of, you know, that they in genuine, but obviously with ridiculous like high school gossip.
And is this set in the UK or America?
It's set in the States.
All right.
Yeah, and the characters are really believable.
They are,
So the lead character is this, you know, absolute, as Boyd would say, doofus. But you find him really engaging.
It's very clever, isn't it? Yeah, because it sets up, all the characters are set up so, like, you think you know what they are and they're quite a bit one-dimensional and then they turn out to have hidden depths and you're like, oh, I've prejudged them. And it's all about judging people, which kind of was what Making a Murderer itself was about. Yeah. How many episodes is it?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
It's a massive treat. You're closer to signing up for Netflix.
Oh, you've got to sign up for Netflix. Okay, still holding out on Netflix.
Yeah, but John, every week getting closer.
Yeah, that is a brilliant show. Anything else?
I've got a listen. Which, as you say, podcast man, I could go on all day, but I'll pick one specific one, which is called Dirty John.
Oh, yeah.
Not about me.
What is this?
And it's in the kind of vein of the ones that we just saying American Vandal is mocking. It's only 6 episodes, I believe, and it follows an absolute wrong'un, let's say, this guy, Dirty John. And
was he a perv?
No. He just
fiddles with himself.
I love the way you're guessing what's wrong with him, and you're like, and John is like trying to describe it subtly. You're just any other guesses as to what's wrong with him?
I was going to say they're really bad. I'm not going to say.
Okay.
He's a serial womanizer, and he takes advantage of women.
Okay.
And a lot of the time with these kind of things, I'd say, for instance, with Serial, when it gets to the end of the series, because there isn't a real finish, the story hasn't finished. You know,
documentaries
often one of their biggest problems is they don't have a third act like a film would have, where everything gets wrapped up. This one. Crescendos and climaxes, nice. And it is brilliant.
Totally, yeah, that is like the new S-Town, isn't it? Because I see it's number one in the pod chart.
Oh, I'm gonna get on it.
High production values. It's made by the LA Times. Really, honestly, brilliant. Listen.
Oh, cool.
As high as our production values, John?
Almost as high.
Nothing gets higher than this.
Yeah, exactly.
And just really quickly, I watched both episodes of Time Wasters that have been out. I thought it was absolutely brilliant because I totally wouldn't have watched it if it wasn't for your guys' recommendations. I thought it was brilliant.
Heartwarming.
Oh, isn't it great?
It's so nice to see.
It's really good, isn't it?
New comedy with fresh faces. Yeah. That's just brilliant.
And it's not what you expect as well. I thought the second episode, which is the one where did you watch the second episode?
He
joins a cult obsessed with African Americans.
And who's it? Nigel Havers.
Havers is in it. Yeah. Which I'll be talking about Havers in a second, in fact. And who's great to see Nigel Havers. And it's just unpredictable. It's not what you think it's going to be. And I think that carries on throughout the whole series. They deal with topics. And
it's innovative.
The situations are completely bizarre and funny. Yeah, it's a great show. I'm glad you mentioned that. So I was going to mention Nigel Havers because he came up. Because in my section of what I've been watching, reading, doing, which is basically famous people I've met this week.
Yeah.
But I have actually been reading a book, which is Michael Whitehall, Jack's dad.
Yeah.
Who we reviewed last week.
Oh my God, we talk about the Whitehalls every week.
Yeah, so they've got their show together on Netflix at the moment where they travel around Malaysia and all of those places. And we talked about how they listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
His mum does, at least.
Is she enjoying it?
Oh, she seemed very positive, yeah.
Endorsed by Mrs. Whitehall.
Mrs. Whitehall. So Michael Whitehall's got a book out called Backing Into the Spotlight. And it's his own book of memoirs, his second book of memoirs. He had one out years ago. Where he talks about, it's basically about his life as an agent, because he was a showbiz agent, and Nigel Havers was one of his great clients.
Oh my God, really?
For years and years and years, yeah. and great friend
of the
family.
What did he say?
There's
the
loads
Havers
of
lied.
Lovely stuff about the Havers. Oh. But the kind of peak point in his career as an agent, he had a gaggle of very posh actors, very posh male actors, all of them a bit like Nigel Havers. It's very funny in the book. And there's loads of old showbiz stories about having long lunches with the head of ITV Drama and trying to thrash out a series with Nigel Havers. Havers. And there's lovely stuff about how proud he is of Jack. It's a really great, and there's a story about how his wife saved someone's life in the local river.
Oh my God.
They live right near the Thames. There's a story about that.
And be honest, where did you do this interview, Bruce?
I did this interview at the house. Yes.
You're very lucky. You got invited into the White
House. I was
Hall
very lucky, yeah.
House. And did
Which
you
was
get
lovely.
Snacks?
Got lovely cakes, beautiful cakes, lovely tea. Barnaby was there, their son. So it was the whole thing was a joy. I felt I was like being welcomed into the bosom.
Yeah, the inner sanctum.
Of the White Horse, the inner sanctum, yeah. Exactly. But the book is really funny. That's the main thing. It's obviously, as well as showing off about people I've interviewed this week. That interview will be in a future issue of Heat, but the book is really fun. I think it's out next week.
Yeah.
And he wrote the whole thing by hand. He can't use a computer. Doesn't even use a typewriter.
Old school, I like that.
He writes it all out by hand. And his lovely wife types it all out on the computer and sends it to the publisher. Yeah.
God, old that school. Must be... Oh, that must be knackering for her.
Yeah.
Deciphering the notes.
Indeed. And the other thing I was going to mention is that I went to see a film called The Shape... This is stuff that it should be on now, but I wanted to mention how I went to see... This is me showing off again. The Shape of Water, which is the new Guillermo del Toro film. Okay.
Very jealous.
I went to a BAFTA screening of it. He is a genius. Obviously directed Pan's Labyrinth, The Devil's Backbone, Hellboy, Pacific Rim... All of these classics I know you love, Kay.
I love them. Listen, yeah. Did you get a plus one in this situation?
I didn't get a plus one. But it's a magnificent film. It's one of my it's up there now in my top five films of the year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, hovering around Baby Driver and Dunkirk and those. And it's like a modern-day fairy story. Most of his films are kind of like horror/fantasy fairy stories, fairy tales. And he's obsessed with modern-day fairy stories. Well, old fairy stories as well. And this is a story about a woman who falls in love with a creature from, like, a kind of creature from the Black Lagoon type figure, like a kind of amphibian merman type of thing that is considered a monster by it and has been kept in a facility by these horrible, nasty people. And she falls in love with it. She works at the facility. She's mute. She doesn't speak. And she falls in love with it. And it's an incredibly beautiful... Sally Hawkins plays the main character who falls in love with this thing, this creature, and it's an incredible film. And the best thing of all was I tweeted about it, how much I loved it, and Guillermo del Toro retweeted me.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Boyd, you made it.
Which for me. I know, I mean, you're probably not that impressed.
No, I am.
But
I am
he is a legend. He's one of the greatest directors of our time, a visionary, Kay.
And he's great on Twitter, so...
He's brilliant on Twitter, yeah. He's very, like, he retweets loads of stuff.
Not loads of stuff. He's very discerning.
No, I mean, very discerning. Yes, but very discerning. He's very accessible. And he was incredible. There's a Q&A with him afterwards, and it was brilliant. Yeah. So look out for The Shape of Water, which is coming out. I think it's coming out in a few weeks. Well, maybe it's not. I should have checked. But it's coming out at some point.
Soon.
It's going to come out soon.
Boyd, whilst we're...
John.
Whilst we're... this is the closest I'll ever be to doing a name drop. And it's kind of relevant.
Go on.
Whilst we're talking about great directors retweeting you,
yeah.
I got the big retweet from Edgar Wright yesterday.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, wow.
Go. Hold on.
What did you tweet?
I could have put this in the What Have I Been Listening To. There's a podcast called Talk House where they just get two very interesting people to interview one another.
Yeah.
And this week's one was Edgar Wright interviewing Jackie Chan. And I tweeted about how brilliant, obviously, that is.
That's amazing.
And he retweeted it. There you go.
That is fantastic.
God, I feel such a failure this week. I haven't been retweeted by anyone.
Don't feel bad, Kay. I mean, you know, we can't all be retweeting and, and you know, you're a busy woman. And also, so what's the name of that podcast? Because I've never heard of that podcast.
The Talk House podcast.
The Talk House podcast. This is extraordinary.
I know.
And I follow Edgar Wright, and I'm pretty much obsessed. So that's...
You need to get on it.
That's big news. That's huge news. Thank you very much. Is that anything else anyone wants to mention?
No, I'm done.
Oh, yeah, so the book. But I'll just say, the Back Into the Spotlight, Michael Whitehorse book is out next week, yes. And basically typed up by the lovely...
The legend.
Typed up by the legend that is Hilary Whitehall. Mm. So let's do the main body, the meat of the podcast, this week's television reviews. Starting with... I knew that was the reason why I wanted to mention the White Halls again. Jack's new show. It could be called like the White Hall podcast.
I know.
It?
Maybe. We need to make clear that we're not being like paid any money for this. We just really.
You're not.
Just, Are you? Yeah. You lot getting... No. Are the White Horse putting a check into your bank account?
Definitely
I just
not.
Don't know about this.
Maybe, but I was thinking maybe we could start... Because podcasts, like niche podcasts do really well. You know, there are like fan podcasts. We could do like a White Horse family fan podcast.
Can we do it from the house and have the brilliant snacks?
Yeah, and we could just like focus on different elements of the family each week.
Oh my God, I'm honest.
They're just kind of daily lives and adventures. Is it getting weird?
No, whereabouts do they live?
I don't want to give away their address.
Well, no, just...
It's near the river. It's near the river.
Southwest London.
Yeah.
That's in my direction. I'm happy to do that.
Okay.
Let's go.
We'll float the idea. But to be fair, this is legit, honestly, John, because Bounty Hunters is a big new show for Sky One that Jack has written with his best friend, Freddie Sybourne. And you know, the other weird thing is, actually, there's a Netflix, one of his live shows is on Netflix the day before this as well. So if you want, like, it's called True Whitehall Overload. So I can describe what the hell this show is about, but I feel I should pass that task on to one of you two. Who wants to go for it, Kay?
I'll do it. Okay, cool. So Jack Whitehall plays Barnaby. He's a history of art student at Cambridge. He's actually studying 17th century Flemish textiles. And he comes home because his dad's had a mysterious accident. He's fallen out of a window. So he goes to visit him in the hospital to find out what's going on. And basically it leads him to, his mum asks him to go back to his dad's antique shop to kind of sort something out. And in doing so, he kind of runs in with this kind of shady character and somehow unwittingly ends up buying a blood antique which comes from Syria, has been looted by like terrorists essentially, and has been sold on the black market. He unwittingly buys it, obviously then is terrified. Now, in tandem to this, his sister, who is hilarious, comes back from like a gap year of traveling, just doing loads of drugs and everything. She comes home and he tells her what's going on, and she puts him in touch with this bounty hunter who she's just coincidentally met in America, called Nina, played by
Rosie Perez.
Yes.
Legend.
The legend. And so she puts him in touch with her. She is, Nina is on the run because she has accidentally killed someone from a Mexican cartel, so has to leave America because of that reason. And so she comes over to England to help Jack, and then a comedy caper ensues.
A comedy caper ensues indeed.
It's very funny.
I'm glad you said that, because so the interesting thing about this is, John, that this is an interesting genre mix, isn't it? Because it's like the thing that Jack Whitehall and Freddie Sybourne wrote together first was Bad Education, which is a very broad, fun, over-the-top comedy on BBC Three about life at school. And Jack's character was this doofus, ridiculous doofus, who is kind of very naughty and over-the-top. In this, in massive contrast, he's very posh, but that's the only thing in common with the characters he normally plays. He's almost like very much underplaying him. He's a kind of quite quiet, studious, as you
nerdy,
said, kind of nerdy.
Yeah, awkward.
Yeah, clever academically, but no...
Socially awkward.
Yeah, but socially awkward, no street kind of smarts, whereas Rosie Perez's character is the street smart one, the tough bounty hunter woman. And the comedy is quite... There's slapstick. There's funny stuff, isn't there, about the car, the G-Wiz car, which is this tiny little thing. And one of his opening scenes, he's parking it in between, kind of sideways, in between two cars.
Parked. I don't know why that cracked me up so much.
It's so funny, In episode two, there's a car chase involving the G-Wiz, which is really funny.
Exciting.
It was really funny.
But there's also proper like thriller stuff. So in the opening scene of episode one, there's this bloke getting his brains blown out.
Yeah.
What did you think, John?
Well, weirdly, I could draw a parallel with what I was talking about earlier, American Vandal, insofar as you kind of go in for a comedy, but you stay because you really want to know what keeps happening. You want to know the continuing plot. It's not just about, you know, there are definitely laughs to be had, but there's also, you know, you called it, I think, an adventure caper. And I'd say I really enjoyed the adventure caper elements of it, arguably more so than the comedy stuff. Not to be disparaging towards the laughs.
Yeah.
I think Kay was kind of hinting at it. Charity Wakefield, who plays the sister.
Yeah. Yes.
Really funny.
Really.
She's so good.
Yeah.
And the dynamic between the two. Like, the script is very funny, but the chemistry between them, it's just like...
Because she's like a kind of bohemian, druggy, drug-taking, freewheeling woman.
She takes piss out of him all the time, makes him feel awkward. I don't know, that really, really works. I think that it's a really preposterous concept, if you like, on paper. But for some reason, I just think it really works. And because everything's so bleak at the moment, like in terms of the news and everything, I really relish this.
Yeah, I mean, it is a treat, isn't it? Yeah, and, Charity Wakefield is fantastic. I have always loved Rosie Perez for going back to Do the Right Thing, you know, fantastic Spike Lee film. And it's a great kind of buddy-buddy thing. And I think a large part of the inspiration is Midnight Run, one of the greatest films of all time, Kay. Charles Grodin and Robert De Niro. John, are you with me?
I haven't seen it. Oh, how terrible is
listen,
that?
Listen, I haven't seen it either.
Okay, so the first thing you've got to do when you go home tonight is crank up your, whatever it is, Netflix, Sky,
my
iTunes.
My VHS. Is it on VHS?
Go to DVD shop. Yeah, go to...
Blockbuster Videos?
Could
Blockbuster
be. Yeah.
I'm writing it down.
Well, Midnight Run.
Midnight Run.
The greatest comedy thriller caper ever made.
John's actually writing it down.
Robert De Niro, Charles Grodin, legends. Yeah. It's in my top five favorite films of all time. It's absolutely brilliant. And I said because obviously I went on set of this Bounty Hunters, and I spoke to and I hosted the launch of it as well. In fact, there's nothing. I've been heavily involved.
Oh my god!
I'm heavily involved.
Think you're Boyd Whitehall.
Yeah. I mean, name. I feel I'm an honorary member of the family. I don't know whether they feel the same way, but you know. I'm going to just go round up there tonight. To,
oh my God. They're going to get a restraining order.
Did you watch episode 3? Boyd's the main villain of the show.
Yeah, I pop up.
He's already sold the antique.
So I said, you know, it's a bit Midnight Run, isn't it? And he went, oh yeah, you know, that's a huge, huge honour to be mentioned in the same breath as Midnight Run. So I think it's definitely like...
It was
decades ago, so it's not like anyone's, you know, done much of it. But it's one of my favourite genres, and I love... It's, for me, this is like perfect. It's like catnip for me, because it's funny... And yet the plot and the characters are really involving, and it's a big ensemble. There's the mad American twins who they're in episode 1, aren't they?
Yeah.
You don't really know, who are kind of weird art dealers, and you see more of them as it goes on. There's going to be a wrestling scene with them, which Jack told me about. That's going to be hilarious.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they're played by this one man playing both twins, which is brilliant. Like the Winklevosses.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Social Network. There's just a whole corner, and there's her family who are like obsessed with being Jewish, even though they're Mexican Americans. It's really funny, which is partly based. Her own family are a bit obsessed with that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was plucked out of nowhere.
There's loads of stuff in it that's based vaguely on kind of elements.
It reminded me
of
a bit of Alan Partridge, Alpha Papa, a bit.
Yes. Yeah. Alpha Papa is a bit like that. Yeah. Alpha Papa is a kind of comedy thriller. Yeah. Absolutely. And when it's really hard to get right, and I think this gets it right. I think because it is because John says the main thing is it's funny. But the kind of most of the laughs come from the characters, I think. And so there is slapstick with the car, and the car stuff is hilarious.
Stop talking about the car.
But it genuinely comes organically from the characters, and they're real and yet they're funny at the same time. I think that's a really, really brilliant trick to pull off.
Barnaby and the sister are my favourite characters.
They are. And Jack's actual brother is called Barnaby.
Good footnote.
Yeah. I love it. I'm giving it 5 stars.
I'm giving it 4.5 stars.
Oh, I'm giving it 4. I feel like Mr. Mean Man now.
No.
You're probably more, you know, you're probably a more mature star giver, I think.
Yeah, I feel. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now I get giddy about these kind of things.
Bounty Hunters is on Sky One and Now TV from next Wednesday, the 25th of October, 10 of the PM. Don't miss it.
Don't.
Watch it. Now we're moving on to Gunpowder, which is the new 3-part historical drama.
As Steph would like to remind you, a sharp contrast.
It's a semi-sharp contrast, yeah. I mean, there is a lot of more violence and bloodletting than there is even in Bounty Hunters. And it's co-created by Kit Harington of Game of Thrones fame, along with lots of other people. But it was his idea. So Kit Harington, extraordinarily, he's related to Robert Catesby, who was part of the Gunpowder plot with Guy Fawkes.
What are the chances of that?
I know. It's incredible. Yeah.
Has anyone checked that out? I'm not saying he's lying, but...
Are you accusing?
I'm not.
Harrington.
But you know, you get those home DNA test kits. I mean, have we?
I didn't test on that, but okay. I did. I'm glad you've queued that up, Kay, because I did interview him. As I said, on the day before it was announced, he was engaged to be married. We didn't talk about that, and he chatted a little bit about this show and what it was like being. He's the producer of it as well, and co-creator and the star of it, and a few other stuff as well. And this is what he told me.
As the creator, co-creator and executive producer, were you very hands-on though? Did you get involved in casting and all of those kind of decisions and who'd be the director, all those kind of things?
Absolutely, yeah, right from word go. It was me and my friend Dan West, who pitched this to Kudos and other companies, and it was Kudos that we really wanted to work with, and specifically a producer called Ollie Madden, who I'd worked with before. And right from word go, like we then started looking at writers, and Ronan Bennett came up as a name, and that was brilliant to us. And we went and spoke to Ronan, and you know, I wouldn't say we selected Ronan, like we decided to work together on it. But from there, yeah, we were involved in looking at, you know, who the director might be, and we were involved in the casting, and you know, and kept in the loop and made decisions all the way. And pretty much with you know, first time we produced anything, so we took Ollie's advice, Ronan's advice, or other producers' advice a lot during this. We didn't try and stamp our authority on it like American showrunners or something. That's not what we wanted to do, but we were there to learn, and we learned a lot.
Can you talk about the casting of Liv Tyler in particular? That's quite an unusual choice, I think, quite surprising to see her in this very British historical drama. How did you come about casting her?
Do you know what? It's just a complete stroke of luck that we got Liv Tyler. I think that we, you know, if I thought I could ever approach her and she might say yes, I would have, but I thought we wanted the right person for this role. And then out of the blue, Liv Tyler came to us and said, look, I've, you know, been passed this script and I think it's really, really good and I'd love to be involved in it. And we said, yes, please. Knowing she could do a very, very good English accent. And she was, yeah, an interesting choice, I think, for it, but also a really, really good choice. She's fantastic in it.
This does feel like another example of a peak, powerful, big budget, looks incredible TV drama. Obviously, Game of Thrones is perhaps the ultimate example of that. Did you always want it to be made for television? Do you think, oh, this could be a film at all? Or was it, do you think, no, this is going to be like a big three-part, three-hour TV thing?
Always we wanted it to be TV. I have come from a very specific and privileged position of being in a TV show which was right at the forefront of changing TV. And I think we saw, you know, we wanted to be in on that. You know, I think long form drama is the most exciting drama to make right now, and it's all that I'm really interested in right now. I have loved my time in the TV show I'm in, and it has informed how I want to make TV and watch TV. And I don't see myself producing a film just yet. Maybe one day. I'm a huge film lover.
And do you have some favourite stuff that you watch? Those kind of deep dive TV shows. Do you watch? Is there stuff on Netflix and Amazon Prime or BBC or whatever that you that you find the kind of the most satisfying stuff to watch?
Yeah, I mean, I just like most people, I just watch The Handmaid's Tale. I mean, astonishing, performance wise, the way it was directed, the way it was produced, the way it was put together. I mean, there's so much TV out there at the moment, but one of them will always grab people's attention, and that grabbed mine. And I watched the first episode of Ozark the other day. That was, I thought, brilliantly done, very Breaking Bad-esque, you know. But I think the BBC is really right at the forefront of great drama at the moment, an experimental drama, and I think it needs to keep pushing that way. And I hope that ours is in there with those others competing on a global stage.
Are you proud of the fact in that scene in the last series with Daenerys that the whole focus was on your posterior and became a massive cult phenomenon?
No, I just wanted to get my arse out on TV. I just, you know, it's always when you do a nude scene, you're always going to get a bit of, you know, wolf whistling or whatever. Well, hopefully you get that. You hope you get the wolf whistling. No, but I'd rather people think that I'm more than just my arse.
So that was Kit Harington talking about Gunpowder K, the new three-part drama coming up on BBC next Saturday.
And I want to say bravo for asking the important questions, like what about his bum?
Yeah.
Well done for going there.
Thanks very much. Yeah. You know, I asked the important, deeply thematic questions of our time, and I asked about his arse. Yeah. Yeah, and it was one of those moments where you think, should I go there? You know, I'll just
always go there. If in doubt, always go.
Really? Oh, yeah. Sometimes I think if in doubt, you know, maybe try and hold back and maintain dignity. But I didn't maintain any dignity. But you see, there was a wry smile. I mean, I don't know if you could hear the smile.
He was engaged, secretly engaged and happy.
I think he's proud of his butt, definitely. So Gunpowder, it is a recreation of the Gunpowder plot. And in the first part, you kind of establishes the characters. Liv Tyler is there, who's Catesby's cousin, and Vo. These are all generally drawn from history, these people. Mark Gatiss's character, who is the spy master for the King, Robert Cecil. We meet him. And it's quite bold and uncompromisingly grim, isn't it? There's hanging and drawing and quartering, Kay. And I know you're a little bit, you're not really at home to the violence. But shall I start with John? John, what was your feeling about this recreation of the Gunpowder plot?
I'm going to lay my cards on the table.
Do it, John, do it.
No, this is more about me than about the show.
Okay.
I don't think I've ever watched an entire historic drama of this ilk.
Wow. Oh. How interesting.
And I think I might be slightly averse to them.
Really?
Personally.
Why is that?
Tell us why so.
I don't know. It just didn't, you know, hit me. And I don't know whether that's just because this is the genre that just doesn't work for me. But I don't think it's that. I don't think it's Gunpowder's fault. I think I'm to blame here, Boyd.
Are you?
Yeah.
So a bit like Steph. Yeah, it's good that you're kind of standing in for Steph this week, because Steph has these slightly irrational things she doesn't like for no particularly good reason. And you're unveiling a similar one.
But I did like the opening credits. They look nice.
Yeah, the credits are good.
Lovely credits. I'm a big fan of a good credit.
Oh, yeah. And opening credits are better than ever, aren't they? Because it's a big thing. Like, you know, shows like Westworld, I'm thinking, has that incredible one, you know, where they show the intricate, all the different things being created. You know, maybe the piano, can you think of that? No. Did you ever watch Westworld?
No.
Oh. Anyway, honestly, the opening credits are incredible.
I promise I've seen some things.
Yeah.
I quite like the opening credits for Liar, I think, were quite good.
Liar, pretty
Affair,
good.
Yeah,
it's a thing. It's definitely a thing. Yeah. You have a good opening credit.
For me, The Bridge.
Yes.
Swedish Danish has amazing
very good
credits.
Yeah. Night Manager.
I think the one that started the trend of all the big showy intros was True Detective.
Yes. Correct. With the HBO Sky Atlantic show with Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Which is coming back for a third series, interestingly, I do believe.
With Mashala
yes,
Ali.
Yes, Ali. Yes.
Lead. He's amazing.
He's amazing. Brilliant. Yeah, you're right. That did start the trend for opening title sequences. Maybe we'll do a whole opening title sequence.
That should have been a question at some point.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I might do a Steph now and just slightly U-turn on my, you know, initially cold reaction towards it.
What did you like about it?
I really liked the cast. The cast is great. Particularly, he's not one of the biggest members of the cast, but Sean Dooley, who Misfits. He kind of plays this. It's like a raspy, like guttural henchman. He's the one who does the hanging.
Oh,
and he's brilliant. He's very good at playing horrible people. Mark Gatiss is brilliant. The priest is played by this is also going into some Steph unreasonable territory. But the priest is played by Peter Mullen, who I last saw in the first series of Top of the Lake.
Yes,
playing a really, really horrible guy. So to see him playing a really lovely priest, I was slightly on edge with him.
Mm. Oh, that's fair enough, yeah.
I guess that's a reflection of how great he was in Top of the Lake.
Hold it against him.
Sorry.
Yeah. The Tom Cullen's in it as Guy Fawkes. Tom Cullen off one of my favourite shows, The Five, which was on Sky.
Also Downton Abbey, I believe.
Downton Abbey, of course. Edward Holcroft, do you know what he was in London Spy? He was the hot guy in London Spy. Yeah, the thing he fell in love with, Ben Whishaw fell in love with. Okay, so apart from the star-studded, so are you against historical drama as well, or are you more open-minded and well-adjusted?
Boyd, you know I love a historical drama, right? I do love historical dramas. So I like this, like, it's the opening is very, like, it's super, super tense. So basically the premise is obviously James I, Scottish King's in power, he's reigning, and he, like, as a Protestant, he hates all the Catholics, and all his henchmen are like rounding up all the Catholic priests. And the first scene is his men basically searching this house, Kit Harington's house, for some priests who are actually hidden inside. And it was I think it lasts for about 6 minutes, but I don't know about you guys. I just found it so super tense. It was so well done. Because you're just thinking, obviously, you don't want them to be found. And it's like, will they, won't they? So I thought that was great.
The opening is reminiscent of the opening of Inglourious Basterds.
Yes, so right. That. Yes, Inglourious Basterds, the Quentin Tarantino film, where they're trying to find, the Nazis are trying to find the Jews. It's very similar.
Exactly. Horrendous.
And I do think part of the reason why this feels kind of relevant and contemporary is because persecuting religious minorities feels like a very relevant thing that never goes away. Carry on.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought that was all great. And as you say, the cast is fantastic. I just, as you said, I'm like, I don't do violence so much, right? And I found actually...
You're not a violent person.
Oh, no, I'm a violent person.
Oh, yeah.
I just don't like to watch it.
You don't want
to
watch it, yeah.
No.
You hit me on a regular.
Oh, God,
We sit next to each other, and you're constantly attacking me, knifing me, beating me up.
For the record, boy's joking. Sort of. But I just found
You don't
this
like watching violence on screen?
No, I don't. And I think this is the most violent thing I've had to watch for the podcast,
really?
Yeah. Obviously,
it's realistic. Yeah, we've watched some violent shows like that.
American, for example, you were worried about me for American Gods, Blood Drive.
Yes,
but they were like very
cartoonish, theatrical.
This was very, very real, based in fact.
Yes,
and obviously in our history lessons, we've learned. You know, I knew about On the Rack and stuff like this. But actually seeing someone being hung, drawn and quartered was so gruesome. And there was even like a new kind of form of torture that I didn't even know was a thing, which I won't spoil. I mean, won't spoil for your enjoyment,
spoiling
listeners.
Spoiling the torture.
But it was just like really grotesque and horrible. Mm. I mean, it was beautifully shot, actually, ironically, and there was a nice aerial shot of it, which was like, I don't know if you thought so.
Yeah, it's brilliantly directed.
It was really a great shot, but I found it almost too gruesome for me. And I know, like, the opening episode is there to set the scene and everything, but I found it very, very slow.
Did you?
Yeah, oh, I did. I mean, obviously, once you got over the thrill of, like, whether they're going to find the priest and all that gruesome torture scenes, which is at the first half.
Yeah.
And then the second half is just setting the scenes of, obviously, like, you know, Kit Harington's character being really angry at, like, the persecution of his family. And then after that, it's just, it's too slow for me.
Interesting. I know what you mean. Yeah, I suppose, yeah, because it starts off at a brilliant point, which is that Inglourious Basterds-esque scene of finding the Catholics in this house that are being hidden. And then you go on to effectively, it's not really a spoiler, the hanging, drawing, quartering violence, which is shocking and it is stunning. I thought that was brilliant because it is, I found it, you know, I don't mind violence, so bring it on. Bring it on screen violence. Love it. Yeah, can't get enough of it.
Lives for it.
But even I was shocked. I was like, oh my God, that's really...
I found it completely shocking.
Yeah, because it's so well done. It's so realistic.
And they don't like, it's not like, you know, with other dramas where they hint at it or they show a little bit and then they pan away.
Yeah.
It's like, this is like, you're going to see everything.
Right. That's right. So then from then on, in the second half, I guess, of the opening episode, it is more about...
It just kind of pieces
there's a lot
out
of other
a little bit.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other characters to introduce. They introduce the persecutors and Mark Gatiss's character. And
I
know what you mean. And it has to establish why the gunpowder plot people are going to gathering their forces and why, you know, they feel they have to resort to these extreme measures. Yeah, I think they just
needed to tighten it up a bit.
That's interesting.
Because,
I wasn't ever bored, though, and I was fascinated. Unlike John, I really like historical drama, especially when it's like this and it feels authentic, very well done. And no point, sometimes I feel with historical dramas, they annoy me when it's clearly... slightly cheesy and the way they're going about telling a story that we all know is very obvious. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, they just hit on various obvious points about...
I don't know what you mean.
Well, this, for example, I'll tell you what, the key to this for me is, so it's gunpowder, it's the gunpowder plot. It could have all been about Guy Fawkes.
Yes.
And then I would have felt, oh, you know, but whereas this focuses on Catesby, who's a less... I didn't even know, you know, vaguely had heard of him. But it doesn't deal with the obvious. And I think that's the great thing. So for me, historical drama that tackles a very famous incident that we all know about from a slightly different angle is the key. And I think that's the clever thing about this.
See, and the funny thing is, I think actually they needed to bring Guy Fawkes in it a bit sooner.
You wanted to see more of Fawkes.
Well, I just think, like, you know, what was it, 3 episodes?
Yeah.
And the first ever episode is just very much like setting the scene, and he only comes in towards the end, and actually, yeah.
Yeah, okay. For Fawkes' sake, you wanted him to come in earlier.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
Just a quick question.
Yeah.
Was James the first gay?
Oh, yeah, they imply that. So interesting. That was a very good point. You see, so that I thought was interesting, because he's quite, there's a guy in his courtier who he's holding onto physically, and there's a flirtation between the two of them, and it's implying that maybe there's something gay going on between them. So I looked that up, because I didn't know.
Yeah, me too, and now it's like trending and stuff.
But if you do look it up, it's like there's historical debate about it. People do say that he might have been gay and he might have slept with some of his handsome male courtiers, yeah.
Fair enough, they were handsome.
So again, that's another reason why, surely, John, another reason why historical drama is so good.
Gay king, John, gay king.
Yeah, king James the First.
I feel like I'm team anti-history. I'm not.
You're so anti-history.
I really loved the ending, by the way, and I would actually be more on Boyd's side in terms of the reveal of Guy Fawkes and stuff. I quite liked the fact they held off on that.
Thanks, mate.
Makes for a great ending.
We should say, before we give it a mark out of 5, that what they're doing with this is, so episode 1 is on next Saturday on the BBC One at 9:10 PM. And as soon as it finishes, you can watch the rest of it on the iPlayer in box set style. They're all doing it.
What happened to some, like, just weekly episodes just being transmitted?
It's over. Yeah. It's the new format of television. Anyway, I'm going to give it a very, very solid 4 stars.
Can I ask you, did you say this is on Bonfire Night, or is it?
No, it's on next Saturday, which is the 21st of October, but it's 3 parts, so the second part is on the 28th, and the third part is going to be roughly around Bonfire Night. See
smart.
What they're doing? Yeah, they know what they're doing,
good.
These people.
Good,
yeah.
Good.
I mean, you could, since it's all going to be on iPlayer, you could savour it and watch it on Bonfire Night if you want, or you could go out and have
fun. With some toasted marshmallows, watching the hanging, drawing, quilting.
Yeah. Mm. 4 stars from me. John?
4 stars from me.
It's a 3 for me.
Oh. Fair enough, Kay.
Bit too gruesome.
Oh, yeah, the gruesomeness and the slowness. In sharp contrast, as I like to say, The End of the Effing World, or as some of my people might call it, The End of the Fucking World, because that's what it's
language
saying.
Voice.
I know.
Beep.
Yeah. It starts on Channel 4 next Tuesday, the 24th of October, at 10:20 p.m. And can you believe it? I know this feels like I'm saying this repeatedly. It's also going to be available in one go that night.
Let's
on
just
all
take
four.
It as given from now on.
Everything, all episodes of everything.
I only want you to alert me if something's going to be like on a weekly basis. It's just...
Okay, yeah, fair enough. I will quickly describe. So this is an intriguing, it's a darkly comic road trip about two young, confused teenage outsiders. It's a bit, you know, like Heathers. There's a Heathers-esque, you are indie teen feel to it, I think.
Yeah.
And the main characters are James, played by Alex Lowther, who's in a brilliant episode of Black Mirror, and Elisa, played by Jessica Barden, who's in The Lobster, that excellent film, and she was in Penny Dreadful, that excellent TV series. Mm. So you kind of recognise them. And it starts off establishing they are outsiders at school, and they're kind of drawn to each other. She's more drawn to him. And it's adapted by a series of comic books, by the way, by someone called Charles Forsman, and this is written by Charlie Covell. And it's kind of an eight-part, and each episode is about 20, 25 minutes, so they're
it's
quite
short
chunks.
Yeah.
It's not like even half-hour or hour-long thing. So it's kind of in digestible chunks. They're drawn to each other as outsiders, but it turns she's kind of into him. She's this kind of sees herself as some kind of like loose cannon figure. Well, I know what you're going to say. I think Kay's Kay's face is like.
No, I was going to describe her. No, I was just going to say she's like an angsty, angry teenager.
Yeah.
Like you know, I think she's marginalised. She's doing it herself. She's isolating.
She is teenage angst writ large.
Yeah.
Yes, and he. Is this even more outside? In one of the first scenes we see him, when he looks back to his childhood, he puts his hand into a deep fat fryer, and which leaves his hand scarred for life.
He's a silly boy.
He's a maverick. He's a loose cannon, possibly a psychopath. Well, he probably is a psychopath because what he wants to do is kill her. And so we see in his mind.
I think that is a sign of being a psychopath.
I think that is. I think you're right. I don't think there's any question of a psychopath. I don't know why.
Why is there any doubt in your mind?
And it's not a spoiler alert because it's established within the first 5 minutes that he wants to kill her, I think, pretty much, as far as I can remember. I've watched the first couple of episodes. So it's an intriguing, bold thing, isn't it? John, what was your feeling about the end? And I guess the title, The End of the Effing World, is some kind of suggestion of how bold, that it's being trying to be edgy and all of that. Did you like the edginess of it, or what was your feeling?
I'm not sure, and I know that's terrible to say when we're supposed to be reviewing this, but you could definitely tell that it was adapted from a comic, but there's definitely that like kind of edge to it. And, and like you say about the kind of the American kind of teenage style, I think the use of the soundtrack and music is great. They do this trick a couple times where you think it's soundtrack, but then it turns out it's what the main character's listening to in his headphones, and I like the kind of little touches like that. It's out of everything I think we've watched this week, it's the one that's probably directed in the most interesting way. Yeah. There's a moment where he discusses animals that he's killed for his life, and it's visualized by them all appearing on the screen as he says
I love that bit.
And so visually it looks really great. And the two main cast members, I swear they're two people that in previous things I've watched and thought they're going to do good. Both of them, I've seen them in other things and thought they're really great. So it's I feel like a broken record saying great cast, but it is really there's only in the first episode there's probably only three people that you
we see her mum, don't we, briefly, and her mum's boyfriend played by Navin Chowdhury, who's always great from Teacher's fame. Yeah. But yeah, there aren't many, no, you're right. Yeah, we see a few more in episode two.
I'm looking forward to watching the rest of it, that's for sure. And I'm not sure whether I struggled because with something like this, as we've described, she's, you know, the like definition of a teenager acting out.
Yes.
And he is essentially a psychopath. So it's there's not an obvious in as characters go. There's not a sympathetic character.
Right. That's the key point. That's the big question, isn't it? So I'm not one of those people who ever insists that people have to like characters. Have I discussed this before? Kay raised her eyes to the heavens.
No, because you and Steph... No, Steph very much feels like that, and I know you agree with her. And I'm that person who often quite I like to like at least one of the characters, because if I just can't relate or hate all of them, it's like I just feel like, what is the point of watching it?
Right. Well, no means are you rare. I mean, that's a very common. I would say probably the majority of people watching things like to have
of grasp of like, you know, something they're going through.
So that's the big question about this, isn't it? For me, this is taking like the risk deliberately. Unapologetically and perhaps celebratorily, if that even a word, going, what can we create this thing? And I'd love to have a look at the comic, because I'm sure that must have been a driving force of the original comic book. But it feels to me like it's almost like a challenge. Can we create this thing about two extremely dislikable characters? There's a line in episode two, I don't know if you had time to watch episode two, where he says about her, she did her best to annoy everyone. And I feel she's one of the most annoying characters I've seen in years. So annoying that even mine...
But brilliantly annoying.
Yeah, oh, she's fantastic performance.
She's brilliant in annoyingness. Like, I thought, God, you are horrible, horrible girl. But so obviously, like, masking, you know, and in the second episode, you kind of touched upon that, you know, she's really, like, upset about stuff and she's so clearly acting out. But
I wasn't sure at one point whether I could stand her. I was thinking, I'm not sure if I can carry on watching this. Mm. Like, because obviously, John, you've said that you're going to carry on watching it. At the end of episode two, I was like, I don't know. Because she's so... I mean, it's a brilliant performance, but they've really done a good job in making her extraordinarily annoying. But you're coping with that.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? When we had to watch this, I watched it. And what I didn't realise, I'd watched episode two, right? Oh. And I thought it was the first one.
That's good.
So I was like... God, this is Maverick. The way it starts, like, there's no context to it. You know, you don't even know how old the characters are, and you're told in a really oblique way. And I was like, but I just went with it, and I was exactly like John. I watched it. I was halfway through, and I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, what if I like it or if I don't like it? And
but John, at least I think you watched episode one first before episode two.
But listen, no, this is the thing though. But by the end of the second episode, I was like, I really do like this, and I really do like these characters, because I know neither of them are likable. And my thing is usually like I need to like at least 2% of a character.
Yeah.
But
a very specific 2%.
Just 2%.
So 98% not liking them is okay.
Just at least 2%. Okay, yeah, there's got to be some liking in some way. They've got to be in some way relatable to me. So the second episode, and then I went back and because Boyd put me straight, he's like, "No, you need to watch the first episode. You haven't done that, you idiot." So I watched the first episode, and I actually didn't think the first episode was as good as the second episode.
Mm.
And I think the second episode, I feel like she becomes. It's not more likable because she is obviously such a horrendous...
You see her vulnerability in second
You
episode,
do, and so you do warm to her a bit. And even with him, I found myself liking him a little bit. I mean, obviously, he's a sociopath, psychopath. But I just really warmed to both those characters, and I really wanted to see how the story ended.
No.
But I've got to say, like him, Alex, is it Lawther?
Yes.
I think he is excellent.
Yeah, he's great.
There's something about him, right? When you look at him, I don't know if it's the way he's like this in real life or whatever, but he's just like... He gives the impression of being a 40-year-old, like much older than his years.
Yes.
I don't know how he's doing that, but he reminds me almost of Ben Whishaw.
Yeah, like there's a Whishaw-ing quality to him.
Yeah, he's got this...
Whishaw-esque.
Yeah, I'll be really interested in what he does next, because he's really fantastic, and she's great too.
He reminds me a little bit, he sounds a little bit... You know, John... This is a very old reference. You know, John Hegley, the performance artist, poet, comic...
We're both too young.
If you're over 45, you probably remember John Hegley. He sounds like Alex Lawther in the show. Carry on. Yes.
Yeah, no, I thought so. And so I'd say, like, if you're not into, if you're listening to watch the first episode and you're not quite feeling it, like, oh no, that's not for me, just give that second episode a chance because, as I said, I was really drawn to it after the.
It's so funny that you watched that second episode first and you still enjoyed it without realising it wasn't the first episode, because I went to a Q&A recently of something, I can't even remember what it was, it might even have been the Guillermo del Toro film, there was something I went to see and the person being interviewed said, that someone was asking if you've got any tips about writing a film or a TV series, and what they said was, write it and throw out your first act.
Mm.
Just throw it out completely and start in the middle of the story, and it's always better. And
well, I did that.
Yeah, you literally did it. They could have cut out the first episode. Yeah. It would have been fine.
And actually, it stands alone. So
right.
This is what I'm saying. And actually, better than the first episode, I think. So, and also in the second episode, the music, the soundtrack is brilliant.
Yes.
I think it plays such a big part, a bit like the A Word and how the music was such a, you know, like a big part of the show. In this as well, it's just, it feels very cool.
Yeah, it is a very cool thing. Mm. I'm pleased that you both liked it. I feel it's exactly what Channel 4 should be doing, is my bottom line. It's a new, I think, fairly new writer. It's a fair, you know, it's a kind of edgy comic book that it comes from. It's got brilliant young cast. As I said, you know, I almost found the characters too annoying for me, but I'm going to carry on watching it, definitely.
Yeah, it's bold.
How many stars are you going to give it, Kay? The end of the effing world.
I'm giving it 4 stars.
John?
3.5.
I think I might go 3.5 as well. Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, I'm going to carry on.
Right, after you watch the second episode, come back and tell me if you go up to 4.
Anyway, it's on. So Channel 4 is showing episode 1 next Tuesday, 24th of October, at 10:20 p.m. And then you can watch the whole rest of it on the all4.com. I think that's what it is. All4, their Channel 4's website, basically, where they stream stuff. Now then, you know, it's that time. Normally, I'd say it's that time and Steph and Kay would say, it's question time. I don't know what's going on this week.
Okay.
It's that time.
It's question time. I did like X Factor Man.
Ah.
Yeah, okay. I thought I can't do it how me and Steph did because it doesn't feel real.
Sorry, do your X Factor Man again.
It's question time.
Nah.
No, it's not.
Okay,
like that,
guys,
so.
Thanks. It's just like setting me up for a fall
no,
there.
No, it's okay. More, it's question time.
Oh, you're good.
Oh, yeah, that was
John
good. Yeah.
Better.
Yeah, John should do it, yeah.
Oh, damn it.
I did it.
Yeah, okay, fine. Three times, it's question time.
Yeah.
What time
good.
Is it?
I'm trying to think of the name of one of the classic X Factor acts that he... Yes. Rachel Adedeji!
Yes, Rachel Adedeji!
Was that her name?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Frankie Kokoza!
Oh, yeah, John! You're like a Peter Dickinson...
Dickinson! Yeah, that's his actual name, yeah. Peter Dickinson!
Peter Dickinson!
I bet you he makes a lot of money. I think if
of
I could...
Of course he does.
I could
remember?
He came into the office one time, right? Yeah. And we wouldn't let him leave for about half an hour because everyone kept on asking him, like, can you just do my voicemail recording? Can you just leave a message? He loved it. He lapped
that
it up.
A lot.
Yeah.
There was one series, I think, believe, where they tried to ditch him. Do you remember?
Big mistake.
They did a big, like, we're going to change everything. We're going to change it all up. We're going to get rid of everything. And I mean, ridiculous. Obviously,
that's
he was
stupid.
Back.
That yeah, is I as mean, stupid as getting rid of Dermot.
It lasted about a week, I think. He was back, thank God. All hell, Peter Dickinson. Anyway, this week's actual question is... Inspired by Gunpowder and John's love of historical drama, is what is your favourite historical drama ever on television or film? It can be.
I'm going like a greyhound out the trap, so I'm going first, and yes. I'm saying Blackadder.
Ah, brilliant! Yes. Except it's not a drama.
Well, there's a dramatic. There's lots of drama in it.
All
Let's
right.
not forget the last scene,
okay.
The last episode, Boydo.
I'll allow it.
And it was fantastic. Well, it was brilliant. I mean, what more can you say about it? I loved particularly Baldrick.
You've said enough.
Yeah, I've said enough.
Good choice. John, can you find, so in your lifelong loathing of this genre, have you managed to find one thing that you did like enough to hail as your favourite one?
I've got like a bedroom sign that's like one of those no entry signs that says historical drama. I'm actually going to have to go over technicality on this one.
Oh.
So historical,
yeah.
So it happened in the past.
Yeah.
Drama.
Yeah. Oh, God, it's going to be something like it's a year old or something.
The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Oh, I love it. Round of
no,
applause.
Don't clap
yeah,
that.
No, I think that's
sorry.
Great. I'm impressed.
No.
Yeah.
When
it is.
When
no.
I try and do pull a swift one, and I try and do that like this, I get called out by you and Steph. I'm told I'm, like, stupid. How can I not understand the question?
No, I'm loving it. Yeah.
Oh, Golden Boy John.
Yeah, Golden Boy John's come up trumps.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
No, it was brilliant, yeah.
It was brilliant. I'm just saying it's not
history.
Necessarily...
okay, modern fine. History.
Yeah.
Right.
Cat Furious.
Wow. I just don't think we're playing by the same rules.
It's a drama. It's not a comedy. Oh.
Does that mean mine was closer? Pogpol.
Yeah.
What was
Pog
closer?
Pol, yeah, what's closer?
Oh,
my one's. My choice is going to annoy you probably as well.
Go on then, what is it?
It's further back. Mad Men.
Uh-huh.
Mad Men.
Oh, this is not a history.
Yes, it is. It
oh,
says,
you
it's,
do you know what? You two are ridiculous human beings. I need. To, do you know what? This is a shout out. Steph, I need you to come back. Everything goes to shit when you're not here.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Well, Mad Men, which traces, of course, the development of advertising in Madison Avenue through the 60s, and it ends pretty much in the beginning of the 70s. And
check
touches
it out in the history
constantly,
books, guys.
Touches constantly, thank you very much, Kate, on actual historical events like the moon landing and Nixon and the Vietnam War. So,
yeah,
just deal with it, Kate. It's
right.
A historical drama,
no,
right? And it's one of the greatest things ever.
Guys, you two are completely right, and I'm wrong.
I think in a poll of like top historical dramas ever, none of our three would ever make it in
maybe,
the top 10.
Maybe not.
Maybe that's true.
Okay,
fine.
Anyway, it's been a joy. Thanks so much, John, for for being a great guest.
Thank you very much for having me. I'll be moving
you're
down
not,
one seat. From
you're not
week.
Steph Seelan, but you know, I think you've shown that you have your own maverick opinions, like Steph. Right?
Yeah, and your right, irrational yeah. thoughts.
So we'll be back next week. So it's a goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.